Hello and welcome to Think Business Futures. We're coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation. I'm Anthony Dockrell. This program is made possible by the assistance of the UTS Business School. This week we take a look into our boardrooms, and what do we find? Well, some of our best boards have gender parity and are increasingly more diverse places. But many of our boards are still way behind where they should be in the year 2023. An event this week at the UTS Business School looks to reverse this problem. Women on Corporate Boards is a panel discussion aimed at priming women with the skills and mindset they need to join corporate boards. And I'm pleased to say we have the moderator of the event here to talk with us. Professor Sue Wright is the head of Accounting Discipline Group in the UTS Business School. She has an extensive career focused on corporate governance and financial reporting. Professor Sue Wright, welcome to Think Business Futures.
Thanks, Anthony. It's a pleasure to be here.
Look, before we get into discussing the event that you're part of, the Women on Corporate Boards, I'd like to talk a little bit firstly about the role of a board and why they are important. What does a board do?
So the board is the representatives of the shareholders. In the days when companies became too big to be managed by their owners, the idea was that shareholders appoint directors to manage the company on their behalf. Fast forward to today, and many companies are far too large for the shareholders to have any idea who their directors are, and there's quite a gap between shareholders and directors these days. But their role is to represent the shareholders' interests when the company's making decisions, and to ask the questions that shareholders themselves would ask of management. So their role is to ensure that the company's well managed, that it's organising its operations to be completely legal and ethical, but also with the interests of shareholders in mind. There's been a move in research and theory more recently to say that companies should be managed on behalf of all stakeholders, which would include customers and employees and people who live in the community that the company operates in. So to an extent, I think shareholders, at least some, would be interested in those issues as well. But good directors would think about those other stakeholders, because ultimately their interests make a difference to the future of the company as well.
And the Qantas board has recently found that out as well, haven't they? So boards are an important part of the governance of a company. What kind of person makes a good board member?
So a good board member is somebody who's got sufficient time to commit to monthly meetings and substantial reading beforehand, and I think engagement with the interest groups associated with the company outside it. I do get concerned when some directors have perhaps more than seven board positions, which does happen in Australia, including senior positions on those boards, because I really wonder how they can have sufficient time. Now, obviously, you've got to have more than time. You've got to bring expertise and experience. And so often they have had a good corporate career themselves, typically might be CFOs or CEOs in a previous or even a current role. They would hopefully have done some training in being a good director, such as through the Australian Institute of Company Directors, so they would understand the governance framework. But I think, yes, more broadly, which is probably the point that we're getting to, we don't want them all to be the same. We don't want a board of just CFOs. We don't want a board of people who've only worked in that one industry. We want a board that consists of some variety of experience and expertise. But I do think a fundamental interest and availability are also key considerations.
Through modern eyes, it seems crazy that our boards, like most of our society, at one stage was getting its talent from only 50% of the population. There is a greater understanding of this problem now. Are corporate boards in catch-up mode, or have they been moving at the same pace as society in understanding this issue?
So in my opinion, they are in catch-up mode and they are well behind society on this issue. The phrase that I like to describe corporate boards is pale, male, and stale. In other words, generally white, generally male, and generally a little bit older. And clearly those three areas of lack of diversity are ones that should be addressed. I think if you look at the business world, we have female CEOs and CFOs increasingly in the last few years, we've got a lot more diversity in every sense across the spectrum of business, and yet boards seem to still be the privy of the networks that have that lead to getting those positions. If you know the right person, you've had the right experience, you've worked with that person before, it tends to be that tends to be the pathway onto a corporate board. It's interesting, boards that do appoint more diverse set of members, and by appoint I mean put forward for the shareholders to elect, but essentially as shareholders can't elect those that aren't put forward. And there is an area of the research which says that in fact it's the company and its management which seeks that diversity rather than a diverse board changing the company. So I do think that perhaps the company and its underlying philosophy and its underlying strategy is the driver of change, and they choose a board that's going to work with them in driving that diversity of experience and considerations.
A statistic I read in preparing for this interview was that in 2022, the ASX 200, just under 36% of the places on boards were occupied by women. I know what you're going to say to this, but is that good enough?
What am I going to say? I'm going to say that that's actually a lot better than it used to be. Even recently, we have seen that number increase substantially in the last 10 to 12 years. It was certainly below, I'm remembering as well, I think it was below 20%, perhaps even 10 years ago. Is it good enough? It's a very thin number of women, I think, that are on boards as well. And we can find that number going up and down if a female CEO decides to retire, and she may be also sitting on several other boards. I think there's a number of really good women who are on lots of boards, and some of the people I've got with on my panel session on Thursday are in that position, and they're really excellent. So this is not to say that the wrong people are being chosen, but they do tend to be chosen frequently, and so that number is fairly fragile to a small amount of change. So is it good enough? No, it's moved up even since the last time I looked at it at 36%. I was cheering when we got over 30%. And I think by international standards, interestingly, Australia is ahead of some other jurisdictions. Although don't ask me to quote numbers on that one, because I don't have them at hand. But I do. My previous research has indicated that we certainly were ahead of other jurisdictions that were just really hoping that the gender diversity on boards would eventually happen. I think Australia's approach of strongly recommending it has helped. There's been a variety of approaches tried in other countries, from legislation through to having quotas, and I think the Australian approach has been relatively successful. Will it get better in a hurry? I think it might, not in a hurry necessarily, but I think it will get better because the profile of women appointed to boards tends to be very well qualified, on the younger side, with a great deal of expertise. And I think as those women get noticed, they will probably get more positions themselves. But it is, as I said, small numbers and therefore quite subject to individual change.
And you did touch on this. I mean, globally, if we look at the global statistics, women only make up 20% of boards around the world. So it does seem, you know, in some respects, Australia is doing a good job. But it doesn't really strike me as that we should be patting ourselves on the back that we're ahead of a global average like this. Do you think it's important that a country like Australia takes a leadership role?
Now that's an interesting question. I don't know that how much Australia is a leader in any corporate relations, but in many respects, we do things a little bit differently. We have recommendations around good governance. We have different set of requirements around reporting, and even the size of our boards is a lot smaller. Maybe that works for us as well. So we have tried a different approach, and maybe we are just the flag bearers of, look, this approach works. Perhaps other countries would like to try it. So, yes, I just mentioned then a statistic that just occurred to me. The average Australian board is about 8 members, and I'm pretty sure in the US it's around the 15 to 18 mark. Obviously, there's fewer positions for women on Australian boards. So the fact that we've done a good job of getting women on those boards is actually more remarkable. But I think that they also play less of a sitting back role. When you're on a board and there's only eight in the room plus a few of the executive, then you're going to be noticed. You're going to have more of an opportunity to contribute and to network. And maybe that's stood it in good stead as well.
All male boards in Australia is not unheard of. And in 2023, four mining companies in the ASX 200 had all male boards. So in your opinion, is this laziness or is there a reason why this might happen?
So I don't think it's laziness. I do think there is an element of when the turnover occurs and finding women who would be suitably qualified to find places on those boards. I'm not entirely condemning the appointment process. And I do think in mining it might be seen that a certain skill set or a certain experience is the more relevant one. But I do know that that there are women there, and there have been Australian companies that have appointed women, mining companies that have appointed women on boards and really benefited from that breadth of experience and perspective. Is it laziness? No, it's not, because I do know that any time a corporate board looks at, you know, who do we need to put up for the next election, or if we've got a casual vacancy, where would we look? They have their eye on that diversity measure. It may just be the lack of networking of those people. Some of, not research that I've done, but some of my colleagues have done research where they literally do like a spider map of the networks of directors that sit on the boards of the banks and the mining companies and the big industrials and the big retailers. And the lines are very strong between certainly a large number of those big companies. You can see that being on a board of a bank means that you're also more likely to be on the board of a big industrial or a retail company, because people are noticing you on those boards. So it might just be that those on mining boards are not as well connected with other parts of the industry as perhaps, you know, the mining sits a little bit to one side perhaps in terms of the networking, whereas other companies are better networkers.
But that structural explanation which you laid out, I mean, it does seem to me an understandable situation, but I can also see a woman looking at that from the outside and saying it's a boys' club.
Yes, they certainly do. I do think you need to be known to get a position on a board. You need to have somebody advocate for you. And let me be honest also, the research I've done on new appointments to boards shows that the men who are newly appointed to boards are equally as remarkable as the women. And given that there are still more men appointed to boards than women, but if you take an equal sample, which I did in some research I did, we looked at the number of women who are appointed in a couple of years to newly appointed to corporate boards in Australia compared to men. We just took the same size sample of men. They were equally as well qualified and equally as amazing. So I'm not saying that there's a dearth of good men out there and they're just ignoring these really great women. It's a competitive field, and there are some great men who are putting themselves forward as directors. There's some great women. It's just that the balance is really hard to turn around when you have, some older people who've been around for a while just can't possibly imagine that they need that diversity of perspective. So there might be some built-in reluctance to trying that diversity. Is probably the structural old boys network that I would be calling out as well.
And look, we have been talking about mainstream corporate companies here, but another statistic I saw, which I found quite astounding, the Australian Financial Review last year published a story that an astounding 90% of IPOs in Australia had all male boards. It was just under 90%, I should say. I mean, that to me is surprising on a number of levels, because small companies are meant to be more nimble than mainstream corporations. But in this particular statistic, they're tracking way behind our larger companies. Does that statistic shock you?
It surprises me. Does it shock me? I would probably look at the industries that those IPOs were in. It is the case that women are more likely to leave the corporate world and perhaps set up their own business, but whether those businesses then proceed to an IPO and to be listed again, or whether they're happy managing them as a small, medium-sized company that's sort of owned by themselves, that's a generalisation, but that's probably what I would be expecting. So the fact that those that start a new startup that goes to the point of being listed in an IPO, That probably doesn't surprise me, but I would like to. I'd be very interested in the industries in which they occurred. They might be ones in which perhaps more traditionally male based. Australia has about 40% of companies listed on the stock exchange. Probably everyone listening is aware of that. 40% of those tend to be in the mining industry, and the mining industry is known for small startups to explore a little bit of this or a little bit of that. And if it works, great, bring it on board. And if it doesn't, let it go. It ceases to make profits and can perhaps be closed down. So maybe it's reflecting a little bit of that mining bias as well, Anthony. That would just be my other impression on that. But I would need to look at statistics before making a conclusion.
And look, we've been talking about the importance of gender parity on our boards, but it's also important that we talk about the diversity of these boards. And you've mentioned before that, you know, that our boards are white and male. How important is diversity?
I think diversity in all its forms is important. I suspect that those who are seeking to get females represented on boards and those like me who research it start with what's easy to identify and easy to see, the lack of females. But I think the lack of cultural diversity and the lack of age diversity, just to name two, but there's every other type of diversity that you could name as well, whether it's educational background, gender identification, whatever else it might be. I think that diversity is important. You know, not everybody needs to have a university degree to sit on a board and contribute a different perspective, although the average person may well have a university degree. So I think that diversity is important, particularly cultural diversity, because in our own culture we are very used to thinking one way and not questioning assumptions. And it's when you go outside that sort of groupthink and question assumptions, which somebody from a diverse background is much more likely to do. When you question those assumptions, you start to see new possibilities. I think it's a launching pad for more innovation, for example, because you're thinking in a different way. You're questioning traditional assumptions about how the industry works, about how sales may occur, about what customers want. It really just opens up more than that groupthink approach will allow.
So, look, we've established why the event on Thursday at the UTS Business School is an important one. Tell us about the panel that you're going to be working on, Women on Corporate Boards. Who do you think is going to benefit from coming along to this session?
So thank you for the opportunity to talk about the session. When I thought of a topic that really is of a great deal of interest to me, it's not just me who I know is interested in. I know when I've attended sessions on this topic in recent years, it's been of interest to a great number of other people, both men and women. And I think there's those who are interested in it as an academic interest where, you know, oh, we should have more women on boards, we should have more diversity on boards. And then there's those who perhaps want to be on boards themselves and really don't know the pathway there. So as much as it's about the type of conversation we've just been having about boards and how they operate and what the problem is, it's also designed to answer the question of, if you would like to be on a board, what are the risks? What are the roadblocks that you're going to meet? How can you overcome them? How can you make yourself more easily identified to those who are looking to make appointments to corporate boards? So I've got a panel that I will, from the outset, say lacks diversity in anything other than the gender sense, simply because these are people that I have met over the years when I've been doing my work in gender, and they have agreed to come on. I do think it would be a very small subset of Australian company directors who would truly represent the diversity that we have been talking about in this session today. My speakers include Jane Bridge, and Jane's role is not on corporate boards, but as a board consultant, where she recommends people to boards. So she, more than perhaps even my other two panellists, has got that breadth of experience in working out what companies want and who to put forward, and how, as somebody who's aspiring to be on a board, you can put yourself forward to be on a corporate board. I think her contributions are going to be quite unique and valuable. My other two panellists, Dr. Eileen Doyle and Vivian Quinn, are themselves involved in boards. They've been CEOs, CFOs, been involved in all sorts of companies, from small startups through to larger organisations, through the profit and the not-for-profit sector. So I think they're bringing a diversity across industries and roles. But yes, I will admit that this panel session is pale and stale, just female. So we're going to get one perspective on diversity, but I do hope that my panelists and my questions are certainly going to be directed to thinking about what those attending want to know, rather than just talking about their own experience, impressive though it is.
And as we've been talking about, there really is two problems here. The first is one about gender equality, and the second one is about diversity and our boards representing what modern Australia actually looks like. So, look, you've talked about the panel that you've got and the kinds of material you're going to be talking about. I'm right in saying, too, that this session isn't just for women and that men may also find some benefit here, especially if there's, let's say there's a man who's on a board who's wanting to open that board up and get it reflecting Australia, but they might actually get a lot of benefit from coming to this session as well.
Absolutely. So it's designed to benefit those who are on boards, male and female, diverse and less diverse, and just thinking about it. It's the elephant in the room. Once you start to think about it, you can't ignore it, and you will see diversity or lack of diversity wherever you go. But it would also be for males and females who are aspiring to be on boards, the need to make sure that your skill set matches that expected for this particular company, the skills matrix that they might be looking to fill, the sort of experience that you have, it's going to stand anyone who's interested in a corporate role in good stead. It probably also goes beyond corporates. One pathway to being on a corporate board is to serve on not-for-profit boards. And I have another contact, not on this board in particular, but who's done a lot of work with in the public sector. And their governance roles. So I think there's a lot of crossover to other areas of our society as well. It's not all corporates and it's not all ASX. Interestingly, one of the strong programs that has run in Australia over the last perhaps 10 years or so is a sponsoring program where through the Australian Institute of Company Directors, a senior male director or perhaps a CEO will work with a younger aspiring female director and help her navigate the pathway to getting a role, which works in two ways, as you can probably see. It helps get good females onto boards by opening some doors for them, but it changes the mindsets of those who are willing to participate in this program in that they now see that women bring a range of different skills, perhaps the same skills, but equally as valid, so that they are more inclusive of that diversity when they're thinking about making appointments as well. I do think that's an excellent program that's been running to help Australia improve that statistic that you quoted earlier, that 36%.
Now, look, there might be some women listening to this interview and thinking they would like to be on boards, but they don't necessarily have some of the skills we've been talking about. What's maybe some of the steps they could take to maybe get themselves on that road to where they could be in a place where they could be applying for boards?
So I think it does start with having an appraisal of your own skills and being aware of your own skills, whether that's writing your CV or talking to a trusted colleague who would comment that your skills the skills that you've built up in a certain industry or in a certain role, or just the diversity of employment experience that you've had in a particular industry would make you a good addition to a board. I think being realistic about that as well and starting small and perhaps getting to know people. I think doing a course in governance and company directors, such as the one I have mentioned a couple of times, I have no particular interest in it, but I just know that it's well regarded. I think it's those steps of putting yourself out there, being aware of your skills and being aware of the experience that's valuable, but also doing the training that means that there's not going to be any blocks when you put yourself forward. And then I think just talking to senior women, taking every opportunity to attend something like this, because if you came along in person on Thursday, you would have an opportunity to talk to my panelists afterwards and just have a chat. And I think just letting yourself be known. None of us are going to be on the board of Qantas or the Commonwealth Bank overnight, but starting small and working your way up, perhaps in a voluntary position to start with, is a good way to get started and to get known.
Finally, you're obviously passionate about getting true equality onto our boards. Are you optimistic that we'll have this problem fixed in the medium term?
Yes, I am in the medium term. Thank you for not saying the short term, because I don't think the short term is going to see it solved. I don't think, as I indicated before, I don't think it's necessarily going to be just a straight line of going up. It'll go down as much as it goes up. But I do think that we're on a trajectory at which, in some ways, we've gone past a threshold at 36%, and with lots of examples of female CEOs and CFOs. We've got to a place where it's now not unusual that the incoming chair of the Qantas board is female, and people don't immediately go, oh, my goodness, how is a woman going to do that job? They just go, oh, well, she was the CFO. Fair enough. That seems like the right person if that's the direction that the company wants to go in. So I think that once it becomes more normalised, it is easier to get that, to have that number increase. So, yeah, so I am optimistic. I think as time goes on and the younger directors that have been appointed to boards more recently get more experience and get a diverse range of experience, increase those networks and sit across many companies, I think it will become the norm. But if you'd asked me 20 years ago, was I confident in the medium term, I may have said yes. So I am still surprised it's taken this long, but I do think we've got to a threshold point now where it will be much easier in the future.
Professor Sue Wright, thank you for being on Think Business Futures.
My pleasure, Anthony. Thanks for an interesting discussion.
Women on Corporate Boards will be on this Thursday at 12 p.m. You can go in person or join the discussion via Zoom. For more information, go to UTS Business School website. And thanks for listening to the program. If you want to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, just go to tourscr.com, or you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Think Business Futures will be back next week. I'm Anthony Dockrell. Thanks for listening.